Welcome to the Todd and Noah Show, taking the mystery out of electric motors.
Sounds mysterious.
Sounds ominous, does it not? Keep the smoke in the motor is what you say?
That is our goal, because smoke outside the motor is very hard to corral and very expensive.
It's like herding cats, is it not?
Yeah, it's very hard.
So how are you doing, Noah? Any news with you? Still healthy, wealthy, wise?
I wouldn't say all three of those. No.
Come on. At some point, you got to be healthy.
Maybe one. Maybe one.
The trifecta. Yeah. At some point, you need the trifecta.
Yes, that would be good.
So, as always, we have Noah Bethel, the Vice President of Product Development, myself. I'm Todd Gunderson, the VP of Sales and Marketing. And we're here to talk about the Air Gap podcast.
Air Gap. Yeah, it's an important fault zone that it gets overlooked now all too often.
We've had five other fault zones that we talked about. Because we find that the fault zone approach is probably the best way to really have a communication protocol with what can go wrong with an electrical motor.
It is the perfect phrase, communication protocol. It's a way to communicate what you're applying technology to, because most people, like you said, think motors are magical. And this really kind of breaks
right.
It down.
It takes away this big, ominous piece of metal and breaks it down into, the issues in the power circuit, or the issues in the insulation, or the issues in the rotor. It's in the stator. It's in the power quality.
Or increases credibility.
Increases credibility, absolutely.
Because they know you know what you're talking about. That's important.
And you can, now that you know where it's at, you can almost correlate with other technologies to really pinpoint what the problem might be. And once again, increasing credibility.
And for our electrical friends out there, we used to think about having another fault zone called It's Not the Motor.
And it's funny that you bring up credibility, because we're going to go with the final of this as a case study where we're going to talk about some credibility with the department.
Very nice. And
so this leads in. It's a great segue to this. So Noah, what are some of the things that can go wrong with the stator, rotor, air gap, eccentricity?
So we always say, when we're talking about this in workshops or in presentations, that you can have a perfect rotor, you can have a perfect stator, but if those two aren't balanced and symmetric amongst themselves, you've got some problems. And when you have that offset of that, you're going to create a magnetic anomaly. It's going to create current imbalances. Obviously, vibration is going to go up. All that leads to kind of a heat-related anomaly, which heat's the number one killer of a motor. So, it is important. It's a key issue, and we need to pay attention to it. And as you mentioned earlier in some of the podcasts, you know, that air gap isn't as big as it used to be. Mm-hmm. It used to be, in a motor with a large air gap, you got a little bit more flexibility. In a motor with an air gap that you can't hardly see air between, it becomes more serious.
Yeah, we mentioned this in one of our other ones, that the gap between the two used to be very a decent size. Now, it's barely visual.
It's super small, absolutely. So any offset becomes dangerous.
So what root causes should we worry about with an air gap eccentricity?
So when we were on a submarine, just as breaking news at the podcast. We had this giant main engine and turbine engines and stuff like that, right? And one of the things we could not do is just shut that down and let it set, because the rotor shaft would warp, right? The weight was so big.
The weight was so large.
Okay, so an AC induction motor isn't nowhere near as big as the main engines of a submarine, obviously. But the same issue is a concern. Now, it's less likely going to be something that thermally warped, but more likely was machined incorrectly. So if you don't have, if you have any kind of warped shaft that's not perfectly built, you have a tendency to have an air gap issue, and that's going to be
a problem. So is this why, when you store people's motors, remember? You used to go in and do a little
motor
turn.
Absolutely. If they looked at our tip of the week, we had a whole series on motor storage, right, on our website. And that's a good one to remember, because absolutely, someone is tasked to go in there on a regular basis and rotate that shaft.
How much do you have to rotate it? Is there a specific amount, or is it just like
usually
10
it's
degrees,
gonna be,
20 degrees, 30 degrees,
I think
degrees,
there is
45.
A general guideline, but, 30%, usually it's a quarter turn, right? You want to remove the contact at the bottom
degrees.
Of that bearing, right? Get it around,
or
clear it from the base, any way close to that, right? In fact, a lot of times they'll have you rotate it a few times, but then stop at a different spot, right? What they don't want.
Yeah, kind of maybe get oil moving.
Get the oil circulating around, the grease circulating around, but don't stop in the same spot. They don't want the steam. You know, if it's a good environment for storage and warehouse, you shouldn't have a lot of general vibration, but it's difficult, right? They do a lot of things, as is mentioned in those tips, to make a good environment, but absolutely that's key. And so, you know, if it was... in that situation, the air gap is driven by a collapsing grease or oil layer, right? And that's key. And that happens in the real world too, not just the warehouse.
So rotor stator rub is a concern.
Absolutely. Let's say when they're putting the machine together or putting the motor together, if they, you got a frame, you got a stator frame, you got a rotor, and you got end bells, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when you're putting those end bells together, they need to be aligned perfectly, right? If you have one end bell cocked in one direction, well, now you've got a non-symmetric air gap. And again, the closer that rotor gets to the stator, the more magnetic pull is going to occur, and you have a tendency for that infamous rotor stator rub. And that's what we're really trying to prevent. So any misalignment or end bell misalignment is going to be a problem. That's definitely an issue.
Right. So misalignment. Now, interestingly enough, you had said you would see story on the way down. You were talking about alignment, cold versus hot.
Yes, that's a very good point. In fact, I'll tell you, there's a couple things that come to mind on that. But specifically, that see story was a situation where we had a brand new belt driven machine. And it was basically creating, so they went in through and they aligned everything. But when they aligned it, it was cold, right? And that's important because everything's good, thumbs up, they walk away. Where, an electrical technician goes out, takes a measurement, sees a major air gap issue, and flags it. And they're like, what? And they go back and they recheck the alignment. Of course, it's off. Why is it off? Because hot alignment is different than cold alignment. So they ended up realigning it hot. All of our alignment indications went away.
So is that something we have to worry about with electric motors, or is that more process? Is that a concern electric motor-wise?
Well, that's a good point, because if in that situation, it was the side pressure of the belt, right? Yeah. So when they misaligned it, it created a side pressure and a mechanical pull. But we saw it electrically because it still affects us electrically. Yeah. So what we're doing is flagging, saying, "Hey, you've got a mechanical problem, and it needs to be fixed, or it may end up causing an electrical problem." Right? Yeah. Again, trying to stay away from that infamous rotor stator rub.
So go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say the other thing that made me think about is I used to go out and do some vibration analysis, and one of this I used to run with this seasoned
back
veteran.
Back in the day,
you know. 100 years ago, but I had a seasoned veteran. He was a level 4 vibration analyst, and he was a salty dog, yeah. And he'd always walk up to a motor and he'd stick his finger right down at the corner of the base feet of the motor, right? A motor has four bolted down feet, right? He'd push his finger up against the edge of that, and I finally asked, "What are you doing?" Yeah. And he said, "Well, I'm trying to see if it pinches me." Well, that sounds a little bit injurious, if you might want to say. But if the bolt is not tight, you may not see it visually, but he could feel a movement and a pinch. Now, that's an old school way of measuring what we call soft foot, right?
Yeah, we need the Ministry of Safety to look at that.
I think it's probably not a wise thing to do. I said, "Show me your finger. I want to see if it was pinched blood, But anyway, I was waiting for him to do that. And of course, he wanted me to do it. And every time he asked me to do it, I thought he had found one. He's going to see if it pinches my amateur fingers.
Right.
Anyway, point being is, often when mechanics or the people who install the motor, right, they bolt down those four bolts. If they overstress one of those bolts, happens a lot, it'll actually warp the stator frame. And so even though it's not soft, it's almost like hard. But the bottom line is, if that one's over-torqued, the other ones are soft. And so it ends up happening. You warp the stator, and whether it's a warp rotor or a warp stator, the end game is the same. You got an air gap problem, and you're leaning towards that infamous rotor stator rub.
Okay. What about bearings?
So, we worry about bearings. If bearings are, there's different types of bearings. Ball bearings are a less concern. But if it's an oil bath bearing or a journal bearing, one of the things we tell people is that, if you're dealing with a big vertical motor with a journal bearing offline, you can expect there to be a little bit of alignment issue, or not alignment, but an air gap issue by design. Because once it gets up and running, it centers the shaft. So it's something to be aware of, that offline analysis of air gap versus online analysis can change based on the design of the bearing.
Okay, so those are some of the problems that occur with air gap or eccentricity. How do we test that in the field? Let's say online.
So focusing online with a motor running, we're going to hook up and we're going to take three phases of current data, and we're going to look at that on a spectrum, right? So what we know is that as that rotor turns, the way the bars, the rotor slots and the stator slots interact, it creates specific air gap related frequencies. Mm-hmm. They happen to be around what is known in the vibration industry as the rotor bar pass frequency. In the electrical side of the world, we call it eccentricity frequency. And then you have basically the first and third line frequency harmonic sidebands around that. We trend and look at those amplitudes and compare them to a standard noise platform.
Any other tests that you would look at?
Online, I mean, of course, I still like vibration, okay, as a correlative tool.
What about inrush?
Well, as much as that's my
that's your favorite test.
It may not be the best tool applied to an air gap anomaly.
Okay, what types of tests offline would we look at?
Offline, you've heard us talk about that rotor influence check, right? Now we're looking at, again, a graphical representation of how the rotor relates to the stator.
Yeah.
And if you have an air gap problem, then you're going to see changes in the variation from you know rotation point to rotation point. So as you turn, let's say if you do 18 tests over a pole group, let's say it's a four-pole motor, you rotate 90 degrees, and you see that in increments. And if you've got an air gap problem, you're going to see that that as the rotor gets closer, the iron of the rotor is going to increase or change the permeability of our stator measurement.
Okay.
Right? So as that rotor gets closer with an air gap problem, inductance is going to go up. Permeability goes up, inductance goes up.
And once again, it creates a unique signature that we could tell, yes, that is air gap.
Absolutely.
So we can tell the difference between a stator fault with inductance, we can tell the difference between a rotor fault with inductance, and we can tell the difference between an air gap issue with inductance. So it's a very telling measurement and a very valuable one. What about if the motor's in the shop? What are the types of tests that we can do then?
Good call. Again, we always talk about shops have the advantage of taking things apart, right? So they're going to actually take the rotor out and they're going to do a run out. So they're through the whole length of the rotor, they're going to make sure that there's not this bowing or thermal expansion, and they're going to try to determine that.
That's
so they're
looking for gaps between the stator and the rotor.
Right. They can do that gap, but they'll also do a complete run out of the rotor and a run out of the stator independently. Right. So that's a key element.
Okay. What about anything then visually, right? So once you're in a shop, you can remove it and you can pretty visualize, you can really see the rotor stator rub then.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. If there has been contact, then that's going to be telling. It's evident. And if they see that, you know, a lot of times they can look to see how bad it is. And we've talked in previous podcasts about, you know, core loss, right? Yeah. And IA square art.
Lamination damage.
Exactly, right. Because when you start to rub things, lamination damage actually occurs. And you know, the worst case scenario is if you rub some of the steel over the cooling slots. A lot of times if you look at rotor, it's not just one solid piece. They got like break points where they have airflow allowed to flow through the rotor. Well, you remove that airflow, things heat up fast, and heat is the number one killer of a motor.
It is the number one killer. So here's, so you went through all the different types of tests that we can do both offline and online, and there's a few out there, as well as what to look for, what are the problems that are associated with air gap. Now I'm gonna take us to a case study that was given to us, and this is it's an automobile manufacturing facility, but it's the paint shop of that automobile. And that's a critical motor.
It's a final stage and no paint, no car.
No paint, no car, so you have to have it. So the technician was there, used some technology and performed an offline testing, and they saw testing prior to the acceptance and recommended, so they did what was called a rotor influence check.
Right.
And they wanted to, and based on the rotor influence check, they said, you know, we probably shouldn't accept this motor.
Okay. A good QA test indicating a fault.
Yeah, indicating that it showed, the rotor influence check showed some anomalies that were consistent with potential air gap problems.
Okay.
And needs of the
operations,
process, operations,
right. Stockholders,
outweighs
profit, outweighs reliability.
The call. So the call was, well, if it'll run, let's put it in the system and let's see what we can get. So once they installed this motor into the system, they saw that and they found those four peaks that were 20 dB above the noise threshold.
Okay. It's correlations. Now you have offline and online indications of an air gap anomaly.
Right. So you now you know for sure that there's a problem there. And the ocular fault zone, which is a great view of putting those six fault zones together in one, but this was, we're focused now on the air gap. And the nice thing about the ocular is that once you go to see that it's in red for eccentricity, it tells you all the different quadrants, each I guess what would we call them, energy eccentricity peaks.
Yeah, from a kind of a technical perspective, we like to say the first and third harmonic sidebands, right?
Okay.
So, and that's of line frequency. So they just happen to be that, you know, plus or minus 60, plus or minus 180 from the rotor bar pass frequency or eccentricity frequency, as we call it.
And they were in red, and red is?
Red is bad.
Bad, always.
As long as your alarm levels are accurate. And we always, that January tip of the week always says, go check your alarm levels. Because sometimes even PDMA, we change our alarm levels, and it's important to revisit those. All too often, we see databases full of red. And we ask them, you know, why is that still red after you've already got historical data to indicate that it's normal? Oh, we just haven't changed it yet. Every January, check your alarm set
points. Go back in and check your alarm set points. So what are your recommendations? What should we do here?
So what's interesting is the individual has done almost everything we expect. So he's been trained well. You know, he did an offline acceptance test, and said, hey, we think we got an air gap problem. He got overridden. He turned around and he did an online test. He saw all the indications. He's done everything he can do, right? Short of, offer some kind of, damaging proof, right? So I don't know, at this point, the only thing he could do better is have more credibility, right? I always talk about credibility. Usually that comes with less hair, more wrinkles, more gray, and more mortgage, right? But this guy may be young in the industry and not, at some point, it's going to go south.
So within 2 months, the actual motor failed. Okay, causing the loss of the paint process for a full shift. So that can be very costly in a high demand automobile manufacturing facility where you lose a full shift. That's 8 hours of people not being able to do the job that they were commissioned to do.
It's going to back a line up significantly.
So some of the things that you learn from this, the fact that they were able to call this out and say, by you installing this motor, this could fail almost immediately. And in this case, within 2 months, a motor failure, that is fairly infant mortality.
And for that to occur, very likely what they're dealing with is, as we mentioned earlier, it's already going into a rubber state of rub. So the local verbal, if you walk up and listen to this thing, it's probably going to be something you could hear, but that pretty quickly, fades into the background, like a Godfather clock, right? The tick tock, when you first put it in the house,
it becomes,
it's annoying.
Back noise.
It becomes
white
back noise. Right. But here's and I kind of, gave a little hint of what ends up happening. When you get the rotor stator rub, not only do you have severe eddy current losses and that losses, so inefficiency occurs, but the heat in that local environment, it ends up melting your insulation. And so, you cut the airflow through it. In fact, it deserves a C story. Now that you mentioned
dun, 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 dun.
That's right. This was a big one in the state of Florida, actually. So we're at a trash energy plant that just replaced an older, big air gap, rugged duty motor with a brand new high efficiency, right, rugged duty motor. And we had identified a fault zone, very similarly. We had identified a potential fault zone as an acceptance criteria, but they decided that, nope, everything was good. It checked out. A few months later, we were asked back to be involved in an argument between the manufacturer and the facility. We don't mind playing middleman if our technology is involved. And so ended up, they had dropped this motor on the ship when it was being shipped to the U.S., right? And they cleaned it all up, but it didn't clean up completely because what they ended up doing was manipulating the internal airflow by damaging the laminations, right? So that's where we were seeing an air gap anomaly. Well, it didn't take but a few months, and this motor burned up completely on one half. So it was, when we actually started looking at the historical data that was taken, the fact that they had proof that they had been checking ventilation, the filters were changed on a regular basis, they got a new motor out of that, and that was a big deal.
That's great. So in this case here, a couple things. The fact that they were able to call it before it became a problem was one thing. It developed credibility with the individual who's doing the testing. Now they're a little more believed.
Absolutely.
Right, when you first come in and you start saying, well, listen, this motor is going to fail, most people don't quite understand that, and they don't, and especially if it's a new program. And in this case, it was a fairly new program, or new in the process of taking this type of technology or this type of data. So they were able to gain some credibility. Like you said, you don't have to look like you have gray hair in order to get
it
credibility.
It helps.
It does help. But if you have the correct data and you're presenting the correct data to the individual, because that's all we're really doing.
You called it a communication protocol.
It's a communication protocol.
Absolutely.
We're just delivering data that says the likelihood that this is not going to last more than 1 week, 2 weeks, 2 months is quite high. We should take a look at it early on in the fault zone.
Get some support from your vendor. Reach out to the vendor of the technology. Let them look at the data. Back up your assessment.
Yeah.
That helps credibility as
well. Yeah, if you don't have a technical support department that you can fall back on, you should probably rethink the technology that you're purchasing out there, because that is so key that you're not going to know everything. But it's good to know that you have a group of individuals that live, eat, breathe, think motor.
Absolutely.
To support.
Absolutely.
Well, Noah, once again, thank you for your expertise on the Air Gap podcast. You talked about all the different types of tests that we can do and all the different types of faults that we can go through. Now, the next one, we have six fault zones. We always talk about this seventh fault zone.
Yes.
But we never really get to it.
Well, we hinted that we could have had one called not the motor. Right?
Not, that's right.
And you know the
but nobody's
you know the
made
15
the
15-foot rule of troubleshooting, right?
No.
Well, this is important, but we're not going to let it out. This is going to be the cliffhanger, right? So the next podcast that we're going to, we'll share the details behind the 15-foot rule of motor
troubleshooting. 15-foot rule of motor troubleshooting. All right, we're gonna hold you to that. As always, we hope that you guys have learned, taken something from this presentation that you can use to make a better tomorrow. And until then, thank you for listening, and we look forward to talking to you real soon.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Todd and Noah Show. We'll be back for another episode very soon. In between, we hope to see you in the Mobius Connect online community, where you can network, learn, and share with Todd and Noah and other industry professionals at mobiusconnect.com, and we will see you there soon.